Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. It is Thursday, November 25. Happy Thanksgiving. From the front page of the Gazette today, the title is A Family of Four, Thanks to Science and Surrogacy. But with the COVID-19 pandemic, they had no idea what to do. This story by Vanessa Miller. In a small dark room at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in November 2017, just days after Thanksgiving that year, Alicia and Ross Stotzmeier had heard the devastating emptiness of unexpected silence. On that Black Friday, Alicia had let the excitement of her first pregnancy overtake her, jumping at a deal to buy a new car seat. But by that Monday, an ultrasound of what was to be their first baby found no heartbeat. "I'm so sorry," the technician said to the couple, who married just over a year earlier and immediately began their battle with infertility, eventually attempting in vitro fertilization due to Alicia's severe endometriosis. "I carried you every second of your life, and I will love you for every second of mine," Alicia wrote after her miscarriage to the baby she never got to hold. A lot can change in 4 years. When the couple gathers today for Thanksgiving in their Tiffin home, they'll be chasing their energetic toddler, Mila, which means miracle. They'll be bouncing their 6-year-old daughter, Charlotte, who is much more chill than her older sister. And they'll be looking back with gratitude on the rocky path that made them a family of four, involving trauma, loss, resiliency, risk, excitement, health scares, massive medical intervention, and eventual surrogacy under unprecedented circumstances due to the COVID-19 pandemic. "There was no precedent. They could not tell us how this was going to work," Ross told the Gazette. "With COVID, we had no idea what to do." Because the couple harvested 12 high-quality embryos from their IVF attempt in 2017, they planned to try again after their loss. Alicia said she was anxiously awaiting her period, which her doctor said she needed before a second round. But it didn't come. In frustration, she bought a pregnancy test in February 2018. "I'm just going to take a pregnancy test, but there's no way I'm pregnant," she said. "I did it really early in the morning. I didn't even tell Ross." That is, until she did. At 7 a.m., Alicia handed her husband a card that referenced their two dogs and read, "We're adding two little hands and feet to our pack." He was like, "No way, this isn't even a funny joke," she said. Although they had gotten pregnant naturally, the coming months would be rough and packed with scares and complications, including placenta previa, when the placenta covers the entry to the birth canal. Just after a 20-week scan, Alicia began bleeding, forcing on and off hospitalizations. At about 23 weeks, she was admitted to UIHC until baby comes. Mila was born by an emergency C-section, August 15, 2018, at just 28 weeks and 4 days, making her extremely preterm and putting her amongst the 1% of babies born in the United States. She weighed 2 pounds and 8 ounces and was 14.5 inches long. Over her 74-day stay at the UIHC neonatal intensive care unit, she experienced a small grade brain bleed, needed 2 blood transfusions, was diagnosed with 2 congenital heart defects, had an umbilical hernia, and needed oxygen up until the week before she finally went home. Alicia had complications of her own. In the delivery room, doctors removed her uterus, which they couldn't separate from the placenta, and ended up taking her ovaries and appendix too. She awoke from the hours-long surgery, desperate to see her baby for the first time, although the medical team made her wait until she was more stable. Later that night, Alicia rode up to her daughter's room in a wheelchair. "I had to stand up because I couldn't see her from my wheelchair, and the NICU nurse came in and she said, 'I don't take care of grown-ups. I only deal with the little ones, so you better sit down.'" Alicia recalled. I was white as a ghost, but it was awesome, being able to see her for the first time. Once Mila was home, she put on weight, graduated from therapy, and today is thriving as an energetic and strong three-nanger. Given the hysterectomy, the Stottmeyers knew they had to take a non-traditional route to get Mila a sibling, and they strongly considered adoption. But the couple also had those frozen embryos from their IVF attempt and the means to consider surrogacy. But I needed a break, Ross said, expressing exhaustion from the NICU experience and the up-and-down pregnancy. Plus, he said, Mila was like a miracle baby. We needed time to cherish those 2 years. Just after Mila's second birthday in January 2020, with the coronavirus starting its international spread, the Stottmeisters reached out to the UIHC matched surrogacy agency in Chicago to begin the process of finding a gestational carrier. They filled out bioforms and shared their life story, as did prospective carriers, divulging everything from finances to religious and political leanings. They make sure that they're in it for the right reasons, Alicia said, that they don't have any opportunities to be taken advantage of or take advantage of someone else. Families and gestational carriers are matched on ideology, as well as location, given biological families often want to be as involved as possible. And the Stottmeisters, after a very rigorous process, found a natural pairing with a surrogate in Louisville, Kentucky, named Olivia Bramble. We had to meet her. We had to go through contracts with her, and we had to find out all her medical history, Ross said. She pretty much had to open her life up. She had to tell us everything. Bramble, age 27, was a pediatric nurse and had her own daughter at a very young age. Although she didn't want more kids, Bramble had watched a friend struggle with infertility and felt compelled to help another family. She knew that pregnancy was really easy for her, Alicia said, and that was something she said was placed in her heart. They needed attorneys in Iowa, Illinois, and Kentucky who drafted a 100-page contract with a detailed plan. It included caveats, for example, barring Bramble from traveling to states with laws unfriendly to surrogacy, including Indiana. And she lives 5 minutes from the Indiana border, Ross said, so they had to write in the contract that she could not go to Indiana for the last month of her term. If Bramble would have had the baby in such a state, the child could legally have been hers, not the Stottmeisters. All of this takes away from the general joy of having a kid, Ross said, not to mention the massive wrench the pandemic threw into the process. The Stottmeisters had to meet Bramble over Zoom, not in person, and her medical screening was placed on hold, stalling the process in spring 2020. That's when they did a pause to procedures that weren't considered necessary, Alicia said. That was actually kind of disheartening, because for people that are undergoing them, it does feel necessary. The process picked up again in July of 2020, and by October, they were telling their family they were pregnant. They couldn't attend most doctor's visits, although they fought for approval to go to the 20-week ultrasound in Kentucky. We had to knock on the back door because they were afraid that their patients would get mad if they saw multiple people coming in with a pregnant person, Alicia said. The couple found themselves fighting a battle of reality versus perception in a pandemic-plagued healthcare system. The lawyers were like, well, you're not going to be able to go to the hospital. They won't let you, Ross said. But I'm like, yeah, but it's our kid. It's my kid. I'm going to see my kid. About a month before delivery, the Stottmeisters received clearance to be present for their daughter's birth, and they arrived in Kentucky a day before the induction. On May 12, at 9:10 a.m., both were in the room to witness the birth. It was amazing, Alicia said, noting she assisted in the delivery. I got to hold one of her legs and be right there for the whole thing. Having induced lactation, Alicia took baby Charlotte immediately for skin-to-skin bonding and nursing. Her daughter latched naturally, and Bramble was taken to another room for a recovery, although she did get to hold Charlotte. Within 26 hours, the Stottmeisters were headed back to Iowa with their daughter and an epic bookend to their fertility journey. On social media, Bramble shared gratitude for her role in the new life. Some days were easier than others by a long shot, but each day brought us closer to our end goal, a healthy baby for Alicia, Ross, and little Mila. Bramble wrote on the May 13 post on Facebook, "The immense feelings of pride I felt watching them hold their baby girl was overwhelming." In that post, Bramble addressed concerns about whether letting the infant go was hard. "She was never mine," Bramble wrote. "She was always a part of this family. She only vacationed for a bit with me as her womb mate." Alicia and Ross said they planned to be open with Charlotte about the woman who carried her during the earliest part of her existence, and they planned to stay in touch with Bramble. "When Charlotte's first birthday rolls around, we'll invite them," Alicia said of Bramble and her daughter. "They'll always be welcome." The couple also is thankful for the science and healthcare providers behind their miracle babies, both in conception and intervention, when Mila was born premature. "Without the intervention of medical technology, we wouldn't have been able to grow our family," Alicia said. "Ross and I are super grateful for the ability to parent two amazing little girls." Turning to the Iowa Today page, on page 2, this story by Marissa Payne. Cedar Rapids advances idea to boost housing options. More granny flats, backyard bungalows may be allowed. Residents soon may have more flexibility to build granny flats, backyard bungalows, garage apartments, and in-law suites in Cedar Rapids. In search of ways to expand housing stock as Cedar Rapids grapples with a shortage of units to shelter the growing population, the City Council on Tuesday approved the first consideration of changes to the zoning ordinance, paving the way for expansion of accessory dwelling unit standards to accommodate greater sizes, types, and permissible locations. The move follows steps that cities, counties, and states around the country, from Missoula, Montana to Princeton, New Jersey, have taken to relax regulations of these units created from converted space. Currently, Cedar Rapids allows these units as a conditional use in suburban character areas. The amended ordinance would allow them by right in all residential districts. The National Multifamily Housing Council, a Washington, D.C. not-for-profit, defines by right development as prioritizing development of higher density multifamily housing through zoning policies. The organization says it works to establish a rule-based development approval process that improves the ability of the housing market to create new housing in response to increased demand. The ordinance changes also would increase the current allowable size of accessory units to less than the primary structure, up to 1,000 square feet. Existing standards cap the size at 50% of the primary structure, or 800 square feet, whichever is less. City planner Jeff Wozencraft cited the most recent housing study from Minnesota-based Maxfield Research and Consulting and said the city, with these proposed changes, is trying to support greater housing development to align with the shifting demographics that we see in our community. The Maxfield analysis concluded that as Cedar Rapids' population of people ages 55 to 74 grows, the baby boomer generation will continue to have the largest effect on the housing market in Cedar Rapids as their life cycle continues. Some baby boomers will prefer more expensive single-family homes, while others may prefer to downsize or desire maintenance-free alternatives, such as single-level townhomes, detached single-family homes, condos, or traditional apartments, the study says. The final change would boost the number of accessory dwelling units allowed per lot from 1 to 2, 1 detached and 1 attached or internal. The city borrowed from the AARP's model ordinance in making these proposed changes, Wozencraft said. Since the city adopted a new zoning code in 2019, only 4 accessory units have been developed in the city, he said. The units could be rented or used for additional members of an existing household, perhaps helping multi-generational families who want a space for an elderly relative, for instance. Seth Gunnarsson, the city zoning administrator, said they would fall under the rental ordinance, so anyone looking to rent out a unit would have to register. We know that we've been struggling, and one of our biggest priorities is to address affordable housing, said Councilmember Ashley Vanorney, who sits on the council's development committee. We know that people have consolidated their housing during the derecho and during the pandemic as well, so this just really helps us meet all our goals. Councilmember Dale Todd raised concerns that this might motivate speculators in depressed neighborhoods to add an additional unit to enhance their cash flow. I appreciate the concern for the Maxfield study, the need to create more affordable housing options, and the analogy that you use where Aunt Gertrude moves into the garage above, next door, Todd said. That's great, but I think about the worst-case scenario. Todd said the goal of creating other housing spaces is noble, and this is a way to achieve it, but at the same time, when it comes to a neighborhood that's distressed and relatively fragile as it is, you increase the density and you've added more potential for things to go amiss, he said. He and the rest of the 9-member council ultimately voted unanimously to advance the ordinance for second and possibly third considerations at a later date. The next council meeting is at noon on December 7. Also in today's Iowa Today news, a Cedar Rapids man wins the lottery prize. Again. A Cedar Rapids man has claimed $75,000 in lottery prizes for the second time in 2 months, according to officials of the Iowa Lottery Authority. Wiley Tooley told lottery officials he knew he had won all the prizes in the October 6 evening Pick 4 drawing, but wanted to claim part of his winnings. Waited to claim part of his winnings. He purchased multiple plays of differing amounts of involving different types of bets for that Pick 4 drawing and won by matching all 4 numbers in the exact order drawn, 7, 3, 2, 5. Tooley claimed half of his prizes in October and had planned to wait until the new year to claim the rest, but he changed his mind and instead claimed them Thursday at the lottery's Cedar Rapids regional office. He said he plans to save the winnings from his lottery ticket purchases that included numbers based on old employee IDs he had at his last job before he retired. Lottery officials say the Cedar Rapids man is no stranger to big lottery wins, noting that in 2014, Tooley won 42 Pick 4 prizes totaling $200,000. He said his latest win was just as sweet. Feels just as good, he said. I think I was more surprised this time than I was last time. I looked at it and said, you've got to be kidding me. I was very happy. Pick 4 has been offered in Iowa since September of 2003 and features odds of 1 in 10,000 of winning games, 30,000 and above. And police say scooter and shell casings lead to a suspect. One of 2 suspects has been arrested in the summertime Cedar Rapids shooting. This story by Trish Mahaffey. A 20-year-old Cedar Rapids man was arrested last week on a warrant after investigators connected him to a VO scooter and shell casings found near the scene of a shooting that seriously injured a man last summer. Cody Michael Adkins is charged with attempted murder, intimidation with a dangerous weapon, willful injury causing serious injury, going armed with intent, and use of a dangerous weapon in commission of a crime. A police investigation identified Adkins and his co-defendant, who hasn't been arrested at this time, as the suspects who opened fire on Archibald Ledzinger and Darian Boyd as they were driving July 1 in the 1200 block of 10th Street Northwest, according to a criminal complaint. Adkins and the other man walked out directly in front of their vehicle. Words were exchanged, and then Adkins and the co-defendant opened fire, striking Boyd several times, causing serious injury, the complaint states. The number of casings indicated 2 guns were involved. The public rideshare scooter had been leased under his co-defendant's name, according to authorities, but 14 shell casings also were found at the scene and eventually led to Adkins. On September 24, officers conducted a traffic stop on a vehicle that was registered to and driven by Adkins, and the co-defendant was his passenger, the complaint states. Officers also found two firearms in the car linked to the shooting through the National Integrated Ballistic Information Network, which Cedar Rapids police now have in their department. If convicted of attempted murder, Adkins faces 25 years in prison. Turning now to the Insight page, the Gazette's own editorial is titled, Divisions Persist, Hope Endures. On Thanksgiving a year ago, we hoped that the coronavirus pandemic and its disruption to normal life would be behind us by Thanksgiving 2021. That hasn't worked out, as the virus's Delta variant continues to spread through Iowa communities, even with the broad availability of safe, effective vaccines. We hoped civility would overtake rigid partisanship in our political discourse. That didn't happen either. If anything, the reckless contention of our former president and the 2020 election was somehow stolen, and the tacit agreement with those claims by his ardent supporters have deepened our divisions. We hoped rationality and sensible policies making would replace erratic governance at all levels. Notwithstanding the recent passage of a bipartisan infrastructure bill, our governing institutions remain dysfunctional and out of touch with the real needs of the people. We hoped for government budgets making significant investments in people and systems, helping us survive the darkest moments of the pandemic. Congress has been mired in ideological conflict on both sides of the aisle. In Iowa, the Republican-controlled legislature acted largely as if the pandemic was no big deal, declining to provide additional funding for public health efforts and mental health services that proved so important to Iowans. Lawmakers passed bills making it harder for schools, local governments, and businesses to keep citizens and workplaces safe. We hoped the state and nation would make tangible progress toward ending racial disparities in criminal justice and elsewhere. In Iowa, lawmakers passed new protections for police and new penalties for protest. They sought to micromanage diversity training and teaching to chill any impulse to teach the country's unvarnished racial history. So our hopes in 2020 did not turn into a thank you list in 2021. A divided nation arrives at Thanksgiving this year, still challenged by a pandemic and mired in political divisions. But we have not lost hope and still have much to be thankful for this year. This year, we're thankful for the availability of vaccinations and boosters, which are the best way to avoid serious illness. We're thankful for all Iowans who stepped up to get shots. We're still thankful for healthcare workers fighting the virus and rebutting misinformation about vaccines and safety measures. We're grateful for essential workers still on the job, and businesses that have fought through the health crisis and its economic consequences to remain open. We're thankful for school teachers and staff who have continued to educate our children amid a health threat and uncertainty spawned by misguided state policies. We're still thankful for nonprofits and groups still on the job helping derecho-affected residents. We live in a generous city and region. Our hopes for next year are much like those we expressed last year. A tamed pandemic, political sanity, investments in our priorities, and progress on social justice. Let's hope next Thanksgiving will be a time for counting surprising successes. And again, that is Gazette's own editorial. 24-Hour Doorman by Todd Doorman is titled A Tradition of Giving Bad Holiday Advice. Over the better part of two decades, I've been writing about Thanksgiving. That's what happens when you have a Thursday column every week, including the most famous Thursday of all. On many of those Thanksgiving Thursdays, I've dispensed free holiday advice. No need to include me in your prayers of Thanksgiving. No, really. Way back in 2005, in a column written for my previous employer, I shared then-Governor Tom Vilsack's method for roasting the perfect turkey. That's breast side down at 275 degrees for 22 minutes per pound. Vilsack has always been a details guy. It's the most moist turkey breast you will ever eat, Vilsack bragged. Honestly, I've never tried it. But are you really going to argue with the Secretary of Agriculture about turkey? And it's less controversial than the time the USDA tried meatless Mondays in their cafeteria, prompting Republicans to blow their giblets. If you're going meatless this year, draw the shades or Senator Joni Ernst might confiscate your dinner. I usually grill or smoke my Thanksgiving bird, and in 2019 I advocated for the spatchcock method. A large turkey will take roughly 3 hours. Or you can spatchcock the turkey by cutting out its backbone and snapping its breastbone to flatten the bird, allowing faster and more even roasting, I wrote. Spatchcock, according to the internet, is an abbreviation for dispatch the cock. Yeah, well, this is a family holiday. Other sources, as far as I know, suggest it's an ancient exclamation meaning it will be done soon, go back inside. Faced with someone yelling spatchcock and wildly waving large tongs, I found most people will quickly go back inside. In 2020, I offered sound advice on Thanksgiving imbibing. Resist the temptation to drink before noon, or at least make an effort. An effort, by the way, is a drink made of surreptitiously mixing whiskey with your coffee, I wrote. Thanksgiving can be truly memorable if you make an effort. I also shared wisdom on stuffing. Or is it dressing? Always remember it's called stuffing if you cook it inside the bird and dressing if you spread it or serve it separately. If you stuff it into the face of a person who reminds you of this tedious fact, it's also stuffing, I wrote. In 2015, I expressed gratitude for our challenging dog, Scuttle. I'm thankful for our dog Scuttle because he only barks at garbage trucks, mail trucks, snow plows, snow blowers, lawn mowers, weed whackers, storm sirens, people walking, people with dogs, people on bikes, people standing still, birds, cats, rabbits, rabbit-like lumps, and dire invisible threats only he can see. Otherwise, he's kind of quiet, I wrote. Scuttle, for all his problems, still is going strong. In 2010, I shared my dad's wisdom. Weeks ago, he warned us that he intends to ban the use of electronic devices in his home throughout the holiday festivities. He's determined to force human interaction among the 11 humans who plan to gather there. He is serious, I wrote. This will be our first Thanksgiving without him. I'll put down my phone in his honor. And that's 24-hour doorman. One community letter today, and it's titled, A Response to Share the Wealth, Rent Your Clothes. I read the column, Share the Wealth, Rent Your Clothes, in November 21 edition, with interest since I had read about this type of business but had never read a personal account of how it works. I was very surprised to read some negative comments about thrift stores in the column. Bailey Chacon wrote, Thrifting doesn't actually reduce consumption, and it takes away options for low-income shoppers. If by consumption she means the buying of new clothes, most of the clothes in thrift stores are not new and are bought instead of the person buying something new. Also, buying clothing at thrift stores extends the usefulness of the unwanted items by putting them in closets. Thrift stores are a benefit to low-income shoppers because items are much less expensive than new ones. I volunteer at Treasure's Quality Resale Shop, and I'm sure that people from all incomes shop there. Bargains are to be found daily and at all of the thrift stores in Cedar Rapids and probably in Iowa City, too. Ms. Cachone needs to visit a thrift store to get a better idea of what they have and who shops there. And that is signed by Martha Troxell of Cedar Rapids. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. It's Thursday, November 25, Thanksgiving, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now we turn to today's obituaries. Only one in the other notices or short list, and that's from Independence, Mary J. Fillinger, age 67, who died Tuesday, November 23. The Reef Family Center Funeral Home and Crematory in Independence is in charge. In the regular notices, just a few in today's edition. First from Marion, Paul, known as Tom Ridge, age 79, of Marion, passed away Monday, November 22nd, in his home, with his wife of 57 years, Julie, by his side. A visitation will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. on Saturday, November 27th, at Cedar Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral services will be the following day at 1 p.m. Sunday at First United Methodist Church in Marion. From Swisher, William, known as Bill Shanahan, died peacefully in his home Wednesday, November 24th. He is survived by his wife Maureen and son Will. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. From Manchester, Clifford, known as Cliff Merle Cole, age 83, passed away Monday, November 22nd, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Manchester is helping the family with arrangements. Online condolences can be sent to the leonardmullerfuneralhome.com. A memorial service is pending. And lastly, from Mount Vernon, William Hartwig, age 94, died Sunday, November 21st, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House in Hiawatha, following a brief illness. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, November 27, at the Getch Funeral Home, Anamosa, where visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday. Pastor Sean Hansen will officiate at the service. Burial will be at the Olin Cemetery with military honors. Thoughts, memories, and condolences may be left at GetchOnline.com. Masks are required to enter the funeral home for visitation and the funeral service. A memorial fund has been established. Turning to the sports page, there is no high school story to report. I'll read some of the sideline columns. First, in Iowa football, Hawkeye Huddle is set for Friday in Lincoln. Hawkeye fans following the Iowa football team to Lincoln, Nebraska on Friday are encouraged to attend the Hawkeye Huddle before the 12:30 kickoff at Memorial Stadium. Fans are invited to join the National I Club from 9:30 to 11:30 at the Embassy Suites in Lincoln, just a 10-minute walk to Memorial Stadium. In Iowa City, Gazette sports writer John Steppe will be the guest speaker at a senior center virtual forum at 9 a.m. on Monday. Steppe will talk about Iowa football and other topics. Membership in the Iowa City or Johnson County Senior Center and enrollment in the forum are required. To register, you can call 319-356-5220 or go online at www.icgov.org/city-government, Departments and Divisions, Senior Center. And in cross country, Cornell hires a new program director. Michael Freese was named Cornell's director of men's and women's cross country and track and field and head track and field coach on Friday. Freese has served as assistant coach for Cornell's cross country and track and field program since November of 2020. He takes over as head track and field coach for Tashina Stigall, who held that role the past two seasons before accepting a position at McAllister College as associate head track and field coach. Today's games, Iowa State plays TCU at Iowa State at Jack Trice Stadium at 3:30, and of course the Hawkeyes play Nebraska at Memorial Stadium, and kickoff there is at 12:30. If you're listening to sports on the radio today, in the NFL, the Bears are at the Lions at 11 a.m. on KGYM. The Raiders are at the Cowboys at 3:30, and the Bills play the Saints at 6:30. Turning to the Business 380 page, here's an encouraging story. It's an AP story from Washington. U.S. jobless claims hit a 52-year low. The number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits plummeted last week to the lowest level in more than half a century. another sign that the U.S. job market is rebounding rapidly from last year's coronavirus recession. Jobless claims dropped by 71,000 to 199,000, the lowest since mid-November 1969. But seasonal adjustments around the Thanksgiving holiday contributed significantly to the bigger-than-expected drop. Unadjusted claims actually ticked up by more than 18,000 to nearly 259,000. The four-week average of claims, which smooths out weekly ups and downs, also dropped by 21,000 to just over 252,000, the lowest since mid-March of 2020, when the pandemic slammed the economy. Since topping 900,000 in early January, the applicants have fallen steadily toward and now fallen below their pre-pandemic level of around 220,000 a week. Claims for jobless aid are a proxy for layoffs. All told, 2 million Americans were collecting traditional unemployment checks the week that ended November 13, down slightly from the week before. Overall, expect continued volatility in the headline figures, but the trend remains very slowly lower. Turning now to the Hoopla section, the Living page, here's an article titled Grab the Garland by Aaron Owen. Christmas flows naturally for Beth McDougall. Knack for holiday decorating leads to job for one Cedar Rapids woman. Her mother always decorated the house to delight the kids. McDougall continues the tradition in her house and beyond. 3 years ago, she started Creative Direct to provide a Christmas and Halloween decorating service. "People said I was good at it," said McDougall, age 54, of Cedar Rapids. "I decided to give it a try." McDougall decorates inside and outside where she enjoys stringing lights. This time of year, her attention turns to the mantle. It's around the mantle that friends and family gather and celebrate. Because of this, she said the mantle represents the heart of the home. She gives it thoughtful and detailed attention, around 10 hours for making items, shopping, and planning. When working with a client, McDougall gathers Pinterest pictures and has a book of styles to review. Deciding on the ornaments is next. Clients can use their decorations, hers, or a combination. McDougall revises the design until she's happy and does a test setup at her house. Setting up decorations can take 1 to 3 hours at a client's house. The cost for decorating can be $100 to $300 for something simple or $500 for an all-out maximum design. When McDougall provides the decorations, there's plenty to choose from among the many full containers in her basement. "Thrift stores are her go-to for sourcing decorations," she said. McDougall said she finds new and nice things for a low price. She enjoys repurposing and making items. McDougall decorated the garland draped across the mantle by hand. She strings the lights on the garland and attaches ornaments. Securing the garland are a lot of 3M command hooks. "Use outdoor hooks. They're stronger," she said. She likes to have the mantle look different every year and follows trends she sees. Among the trends are the use of pink, natural items, black and white, and items that simply are simple and better. Whatever the look, there's bound to be a Santa or two. Every year, McDougall's mother-in-law, Dale Griffin, in Dallas, gives her a Santa, which arrives the day after Thanksgiving. After 18 years of marriage, she has shimmery, stuffed, and suspended Santas. McDougall's Christmas decorations have been a hit with friends and neighbors. When she calls to arrange pickup, people say they want to keep them for a while, she said. As for her home, people come by and say thanks for decorating. It really makes people happy. To inquire about her decorating service, call Beth McDougall at 319-538-8300. In the Hoopla section, turning to the food category, an upscale Mexican restaurant opens in Iowa City. An upscale modern Mexican restaurant held its grand opening on November 11 after initially opening September 10 at 401 South Lynn Street. Owner Fernando Weber describes Alegria as a modern restaurant rooted in tradition and the True Flavors of Mexico. And I probably pronounced that wrong. It's spelled A-L-E-B-R-I-J-E. In addition to an extensive menu, the restaurant offers an adventurous drink menu with several variations of margaritas and sangrias, as well as craft beer and tequila options. Weber said the restaurant took 3 years to organize. Alegria is a restaurant I've been thinking about for about half my life, he said at the grand opening, detailing inspirations as his family moved to the United States from Mexico when his father started working in restaurants. In Coralville, Foundry Food and Tap opened to the public November 17 in Coralville, the small chain's first location outside of the Quad Cities. Foundry's first location was in Bettendorf. Coralville is its second location at 3266 Cross Park Road, Suite 101. The menu offers a wide variety of American fusion appetizers and wings, in addition to steaks, pastas, fajitas, and burgers. Soon the new location will offer brunch. Its Bettendorf brunch spread boasts stations for prime rib, carved ham, omelets and eggs benedict, crepes and bottomless mimosas, Bloody Marys and Moscow mules. And lastly, a sports bar is to replace Pays Ohana. Scores on 33rd is set to open in the building that was home to Pies Ohana Mandarin in Cedar Rapids for 34 years. The former Asian restaurant at 3287 6th Street Southwest closed on June 30 when its owners retired. Scores on 33rd has been renovating the building over the past few months to serve as a sports bar. An opening date has not yet been announced, but owner Andre Torres previously told KHAK he hoped to open by mid-November. He also owns Villa's Patio in Marion. And another article in the Hoopla section is titled Hot Food, Cool Vibes. And a photo is also on the page that includes Tiffany-style lamps that hang from the ceiling over barrel-shaped booths at The Hip Stir, which opened in September in the former Ramsey's site along 7th Avenue in Marion. And if you go, it's called The Hip-Stir, 1120 7th Avenue in Marion. Their hours are 11 a.m. to midnight Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to midnight Saturday and Sunday. You can see them online, facebook.com/thehipster, or you can call them at 319-200-5465. Now open for dine-in and carry-out with a full bar. Patio service is offered seasonally and is currently closed. Festive Forest is the title of an article written by Diana Nolan. Tannenbaum Forest anchors Old World Christmas in the Amana Colonies. O Tannenbaum, how lovely are thy branches, especially when decorated in holiday style to create an indoor forest at the century-old Fest Hall Barn, 4707 220th Trail in Amana. You'll easily be able to spend a day away there and may need to go back several times to see all the Amanas have offered during the holidays. It's been a record-breaking season for festivals in the historic colonies steeped in German traditions. And the Tannenbaum Forest has broken another record before the doors even opened to the public 11 a.m. Friday. As of November 17, 67 trees had been snapped up by local businesses, organizations, groups, and families, ready to festoon the live branches top to bottom. And lead elf Dana Jensen expects to reach the cap of 70 live trees. They will be on display Friday to Sunday this week through December 19. That's nearly double the 40-plus trees decorated for the third Tannenbaum Forest in 2002. The trees are supplied through the Amana Forestry Department, and after the festival, they will be undecked and returned to the department, where some may stoke the firefighters' open fire chill events, Jensen said. And I get to pick up pine needles for the next 6 months, she added with a laugh, just shy of ho-ho-ho. As event manager for Amana Colonies Festivals, Jensen, age 31, of Marengo, is in charge of the holiday happening. She came on board in June, so she missed organizing Mayfest, but noted it started a chain of record-breaking festivals as people started venturing forth from the pandemic. We've had our biggest Mayfest, our biggest Worst Fest, and our biggest Oktoberfest ever, she said. So we're coming off the back of three back-to-back record-breaking festivals. Tannenbaum Forest typically draws upward of 15,000 visitors, and in an effort to keep them safe, masks will be required for everyone indoors. Like last year, entry will be staggered to limit the number of people in the historic barn at any one moment. Tannenbaum was the only one of our major events last year that we were able to pull off, Jensen said, and the COVID-19 safety protocols they put in place will carry forward. There will be more people allowed this year than last. That way people can enjoy the forest and have room to spread out and take their time looking and not feel rushed by the clouds. Like last year, one person visitors won't see is Santa. He's too busy at the North Pole making sure everyone gets toys, Jensen said. But he's going to send a reindeer down and one of his elves will be in the forest some of those days. He did get a little bit of time off to visit the Hotel Millwright. If the weather cooperates, one of Santa's reindeer will be at the forest December 11th from 1 to 4, and believers can write their wish lists on pre-printed stationery at the Amana Visitors Center near the Fest Hall barn, then drop them in the direct to Santa mailbox inside the forest. A short hop over the rooftops, Santa will be at the Hotel Millwright from 2 to 4 p.m. Jensen expects the jolly old elf to return to Tannenbaum Forest next year. What's happening column today is titled Seasonal Celebrations Will Be in Full Swing Around the Corridor. Here's a guide to some of the concerts and events in the coming days, including the first public menorah lighting in Cedar Rapids. Chabad Lupovich of Northeast Iowa will ignite a public 10-foot menorah in front of Ginsburg Jewelers, followed by a community-wide celebration Monday, the second night of Hanukkah. The free event will be held from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Rabbi Aaron Schimmel will light the menorah, and Mayor Brad Hart will deliver holiday greetings. Rabbi Schimmel, director of the Chabad Jewish Center of Northeast Iowa, said this is the first such event in Cedar Rapids. With the Cedar Rapids population growing, more and more people are requesting that we diversify our offerings. We're delighted to do this at Ginsburg Jewelers this year. The celebration will also feature singing, dancing, donuts, and latkes, which are potato pancakes, a traditional Hanukkah food, as well as Hanukkah gelt, gifts, and dreidels for the children. Hanukkah is the Jewish 8-day wintertime festival of lights, celebrated with a nightly menorah lighting, special prayers, and fried foods. To read more about it, go to chabad.org/the menorah. Display at Ginsburg Jewelers is one of several in Iowa and one of thousands of public menorahs sponsored by Chabad throughout the world, helping children and adults of all walks of life discover and enjoy the holiday message. Also, Glenn Campbell tribute at the Old Creamery. Carl Acuff Jr. is bringing the Wichita Lineman tribute to the music of Glenn Campbell to the Old Creamery Theater December 2. The show covers Campbell's greatest hits, including By the Time I Get to Phoenix, Gentle on My Mind, Rhinestone Cowboy, Galveston, and more. It's at the Old Creamery Theater, 3938th Avenue in Amana. It's at 2 p.m. Tickets are $32.50, and you can purchase them online. Other holiday concerts include Cirque Musica Holiday Spectacular, 7 p.m. at the Paramount Theater on November 27. This new production features some of the greatest holiday songs of all time performed alongside Cirque Musica's acrobats and aerialists. Costs are $35.75 and up. On November 29th, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy's Wild and Swingin' Holiday Party is at the Paramount Theater, 7:30 p.m., drawing on a rich catalog of holiday classics and Christmas originals from the band's two full-length holiday albums. Big Bad Voodoo Daddy brings its world-renowned live show and fun and quirky take on the holidays. And those tickets are $34 to $54. November 30, Coe College will present its Christmas Convocation at 11 a.m. at 7 p.m. Christmas Vespers at Sinclair Auditorium at Coe College. Admission is free. On December 1, UI Symphony Orchestra Holiday Pops Concert will be presented at the Hancher Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. The ensemble's first holiday pop celebration features symphonic holiday tunes, jazzy vocal selections, festive film music, and a collaboration with the Prussell School of Music. And that concert is free. On December 2nd through the 5th, Christmas at Luther, Awake and Greet the New Morn. Christmas at Luther this year comes from a hymn by Luther alum Marty Haugen, who graduated in 73, not only a celebration and anticipation of the birth of Christ, but also a hope to exit the 18-month pandemic slumber and begin to welcome a return to the familiarity of life. Tickets are $35 in person or $20 live stream. You can purchase tickets at luther.edu. And on December 3, Irish Christmas in America, 8 p.m. at the CSPS Hall, featuring traditional Irish artists with lively instrumental tunes on fiddle, flute, uilleann pipes and harp, as well as Irish old-style dancing. Tickets are $30 in advance or $35 at the door. Finishing up with the weather, windy and colder today. Wind out of the northwest at 20 to 30 miles an hour. Cedar Rapids will see a high of 31 and a low of 16. Iowa City, a high of 32 and a low of 17. Normally, today, the high would be 42 and the low 26. A record of 68 degrees was set in 1896. The record low of 7 below zero was set in 1977 on this date. We're in the waning gibbous moon phase. Sunset tonight is at 4:39 p.m., sunrise tomorrow at 7:10, so daylight is 9 hours and 31 minutes. Thanksgiving is one of those tricky holidays for us to look back at climatologically because it falls on a different date every year. After digging into the history books, here's how Thanksgiving past has shaped up. The warmest temperature reading on Thanksgiving in Cedar Rapids was in 1899 at 68 degrees. The coldest Thanksgiving, 2 degrees, was recorded in both 1950 and 1898. This year will be chilly, but certainly much warmer than that. Our wettest Thanksgiving on record in Cedar Rapids was more recent, occurring in 2015, when 1.75 inches of precipitation fell. 1918 holds the record for the snowiest Thanksgiving in Cedar Rapids, when 3.2 inches of snow was recorded. Thankfully, we aren't expecting snow in eastern Iowa this year for Thanksgiving, and that's by meteorologist Joe Winters. That does it for the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Thanksgiving Day. I'm your reader, Kathleen. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening, and have a great, safe day.
I'm getting older. Do I need to worry about falling?
Yes, you do. Every year, 1 in 4 people 65 and older will experience a fall, and many result in serious injury. The majority of falls happen at home, so take a look around. Replace bulbs and add lighting to help you see obstacles. Remove things that can make you trip. Fix uneven steps and floors, and install handrails in bathrooms and on stairs. Consider balance or strength training exercises, which can help with agility. Get your eyes and hearing checked regularly. Changes in your hearing can affect your balance. To learn more, please talk to your doctor about steps you can take to help prevent a fall. You can also visit aarpfoundation.org or medicaremadeclear.com/falls. This message was brought to you by United Healthcare and AARP Foundation.